Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Obama in the world this week. McCain home alone but still punching. A hurricane, an oil spill, and Congress moves on housing. Barack Obama got lofty with a big crowd in Germany.
People of the world, look at Berlin, where a wall came down, a continent came together, and history proved that there is no challenge too great for a world that stands as one.
John McCain went to a German restaurant in Ohio and cast his eye on Europe.
The throng of adoring fans awaits Senator Obama in Paris, and that's just the American press.
And a lifeline for housing and finance, they hope, moves in Congress. Here's House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer.
This legislation will enable at least 400,000 homeowners, that's 400,000 families, to refinance their homes.
This hour, On Point, our news roundtable goes behind the headlines. Joining me now from Washington is Gerald Seib, assistant managing editor at the Wall Street Journal. He writes the paper's weekly Capital Journal column. His latest book with John Hardwood is Pennsylvania Avenue, Profiles in Backroom Power. Gerald Seib, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Also joining us from Washington, Michael Cranish, Washington correspondent for the Boston Globe. He's been out with John McCain this week. Michael, great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. Jack, welcome.
Hello, Tom, Gerald, and Michael.
Let's go straight to a little tape, a little context out of history, and then we'll go to Obama in Berlin. Here's JFK at City Hall in West Berlin, June 26, 1963.
Today, in the world of freedom, the proudest boast is, Ich bin ein Berliner.
We remember it, or we've heard it. Here's President Ronald Reagan at the Brandenburg Gate, West Berlin, June 12, 1987.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Famous again, an icon. And here's Senator Barack Obama, yesterday not president, but candidate, speaking to a crowd of 200,000 at the Victory Column in Berlin's Tiergarten Park.
The walls between old allies on either side of the Atlantic cannot stand. The walls between the countries with the most and those with the least cannot stand. The walls between races and tribes, natives and immigrants, Christians and Muslims and Jews cannot stand. These now are the walls we must tear down.
Gerald Seib, there's a lot to talk about this week, but that was an image right there. What did you make? I mean, we've got a lot of countries in our own country here to look at, but what did you make of Senator Barack Obama, candidate in front of that crowd of 200,000 in his speech yesterday? What do you say about it, Gerald?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, first of all, Barack Obama gives a great speech, and that was a great setting, and that's exactly what the campaign had hoped for. That's the first point, I think, to make, and it's fairly obvious. The second point is to remember how highly unusual this is, that a candidate in the middle of the summer of an election year to devote a full week to foreign travel is just not the way that things are done normally. So this is very aberrational, and I don't know whether it was risky or not, but there is the downside potential here that people will look at Barack Obama in that setting making that speech and say it's a bit presumptuous. He's not president yet, after all. So it's highly unusual, but certainly was dramatic.
Jack Beatty, what do you make of the image, of the message?
Well, I was thrilled at the image. I mean, to see an American president that popular in Europe, that's unusual. We haven't seen that in a long time. And as to the message, some commentators said he said very little deliberately because he just wanted the image to linger in the air. But I did find the emphasis there on the rich nations tearing down the wall between them and the poor nations, the idea of transcending ethnic and religious differences. This struck me as something of what Obama wants to do, really, as president. He does want to increase foreign aid, I think, by some $50 billion toward the poor nations. And his general pitch on reconciliation and unity is also part, I think, of his anti-terrorism strategy, which he also spoke to there. And I don't think the Europeans or that crowd really wanted to hear as much on the anti-terrorism front as Obama wanted to say.
Here's a little more from the Tiergarten yesterday, the Victory Column in Berlin. Berlin, Barack Obama saying that the world was watching to see whether America and other Western countries would rise to the world's challenges.
Will we lift the child in Bangladesh from poverty and shelter the refugee in Chad and banish the scourge of AIDS in our time? Will we stand for the human rights of the dissident in Burma, the blogger in Iran, or the voter in Zimbabwe? Will we give meaning to the words never again in Darfur?
Michael Cranish, you've been with John McCain this week. What is the McCain campaign making of Obama on the road? And, of course, Europe is still not over, and maybe the least of it. I mean, through Afghanistan, Iraq, Jordan, Israel. How is the McCain campaign looking out on this? How has it looked out on this spectacle, Michael?
Well, Tom, the McCain campaign and John McCain campaigning in New Hampshire this week was very strident in going after Obama. Clearly, they're upset a little bit over the attention that this has received. But John McCain launched a very strong attack against Obama. He said on Tuesday in New Hampshire that Obama would, quote, rather lose a war in order to win a campaign.
Yeah.
And in talking to the folks who've been with McCain for a while, that's the strongest statement he's made. During the campaign, John McCain had talked about himself, saying he'd rather lose a campaign than lose a war. But to turn it around like that was quite a twist, trying to bring the attention back. And he spent a lot of the week talking about the fact that he believes the surge has worked, but Obama won't acknowledge the surge has worked. So that was their message of the week, and they hit it almost every hour.
Let's listen to just a little bit. This was a very – if Obama was unusual in his settings and his presentation this week around half the world, McCain was also unusual. Very hard-hitting attack for one presidential candidate on another here with just that – quote that you cite, Michael. Here he is, John McCain, talking up the success of the surge, going hard at Obama on the trail this week at a town hall meeting in New Hampshire on Tuesday.
The benefits of this success are tangible, and we cannot let that all disappear by doing what Senator Obama wants to do. And this is a clear choice that the American people have. I had the courage and the judgment to say that I would rather lose a political campaign than lose a war. It seems to me that Senator Obama would rather lose a war in order to win a political campaign.
A presidential candidate would rather lose a war to win a political campaign. Jack Beatty, what do you make of that line of attack?
Well, that really shocked me because it struck me as a desperate comment, especially in a week when the Prime Minister of Iraq, Mr. Maliki, essentially agreed with Barack Obama's plan to phase out combat forces by the end of 2010. So is he also saying, therefore, that Mr. Maliki wants to lose a war to win a presidential election? You know, there's an element now in the McCain campaign where you really have to kind of put your mind on deep freeze to accept what he's saying. I mean, the ad that alleges or seems to insinuate that Obama is responsible for the high gasoline prices. This comment about would rather lose a war to win an election. There's just a feeling of desperation I get out of McCain this week.
But Gerald Seib, in the polls, if we want to look at them, John McCain hanging in some very key states we're seeing this week, a poll that NBC and your newspaper, The Wall Street Journal, did. Very interesting on that front.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that I think a lot of people thought that there would be a surge for Barack Obama after he sewed up the nomination across the summer, and then there would be some tightening in the fall. There really hasn't been some giant Obama surge. In our poll, he leads by 6 percentage points, 47 to 41, same percentage point lead as a month ago. And we did some battleground state polling with Quinnipiac University and actually saw the Obama lead shrinking a little bit in Michigan and Minnesota and Wisconsin and in Colorado, where the two candidates are essentially tied. So there are two ways of looking at this. One is that Obama is getting a lot of attention and a lot of money, and he's riding pretty high. But the other is it hasn't translated the way some people might have. I think the reason for that is that there are a lot of people who are potential Obama voters who aren't quite there yet. They may not get there because they're looking and saying, is this a safe choice for president for us? And they haven't come to the conclusion that the answer to that for them yet is yes.
Let's go to Lou in Buffalo, New York. Lou, you're on the air, my friend.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for taking the call. I almost see this as like a a Rod Serling Twilight Zone kind of episode where, like, it's be careful what you wish for. I mean, the conservatives had this website where they were counting the years, the month, the days, the months, the hours that last Barack Obama went overseas.
When will Obama go to Iraq? Yeah.
Well, he goes to the Middle East. He goes. He spends a week and is very, very well received. And what does McCain do? He disses him as if to say, "Well, you know, if I was going to make a speech like that, I'd at least wait till I was president." Well, I mean, if he's receiving, he's being received by all these people. Of course, he's going to interact with them and talk and make a speech. I mean, what would you expect to do when you're involved with so many high-level people, high-ranking people in so many countries? I think McCain's gone desperate. I had a lot of respect for this guy as a Vietnam veteran, but I tell you what, he's going into desperation mode.
Well, yet the polls may have him hanging in there. Michael Cranish, what do you say? McCain wished for this. He goaded Obama to do this, and then it looked pretty good for Obama on balance.
Well, McCain criticized Obama for announcing his policy on Iraq before going there and going to Afghanistan. So that's what McCain was thinking on most of all, not just that he was going, but that he had already come to his conclusion. And again, hitting him over whether the surge strategy had worked or not. Clearly, the McCain campaign is very upset that Obama is stealing some of their thunder. If there is an agreement that basically the war's been won, that this has succeeded, then perhaps the people can move on to the economy, which is supposed to be more of an Obama issue.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. Obama abroad, McCain up in key polls, big legislation on housing and finance, Hurricane Dolly, and an oil spill on the Mississippi. We're joined by Gerald Seib, assistant managing editor for the Wall Street Journal, writes the paper's weekly Capital Journal column. He's co-author of Pennsylvania Avenue. Michael Cranish, Washington correspondent for the Boston Globe, is with us. He's been out on the hustings with John McCain this week as Barack Obama went off around half the world. Jack Beatty's here. Let's go to Beaufort, North Carolina, and Michael. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi. So with all of the adoring crowds, I thought the most impressive moment that I saw Obama this week was his talk in Amman after he got off the helicopter with Petraeus and basically said that he listened to him, but he would make his own decisions, and he kindly begged to disagree. I thought it was a real strong, confident, self-assured statement about executive, military, and maybe a sideways dig at McCain.
Yeah, very interesting, and a new kind of relationship. We'll look at that, Michael, and thanks for calling. Let's listen to a little bit of Obama in Amman, Jordan. This is after meeting with Iraq's leaders, as you say, after his helicopter ride and more with General David Petraeus, U.S. commander in Iraq. Obama said he was sticking with his plan to withdraw troops 16 months after he gets into office. Here he is at his press conference on Tuesday.
The message we heard from Iraq's leaders is that they're ready to do more, and they want to take more responsibility for their country. I believe that the best way to support Iraqi sovereignty and encourage the Iraqis to stand up is through the responsible redeployment of our combat brigades. I welcome the growing consensus in the United States and Iraq for a timeline. My view, based on the advice of military experts, is that we can redeploy safely in 16 months so that our combat brigades are out of Iraq in 2010.
And, of course, things were kind of going his way. Signals from Washington that they were open to a vision of a time for getting out. Iraq's Prime Minister, Nur al-Maliki, making statements, being quoted to that effect. And then his spokesman, Ali Adabag, suggesting to reporters here that U.S. troops could be withdrawn by 2010.
We are not talking about the timetable which has been used for the election. We are talking on a real timetable which Iraqis set.
What is that timetable?
Up to 2010.
2010, there's a number. Gerald Seib, Barack Obama stood in Amman, Jordan, and said plainly that David Petraeus does not want a timetable. Yet he's there talking 4-1. This is a new kind of interaction, at least in recent years, between a potential commander-in-chief and top commander.
It is, and I actually agree with the caller. I think that was in many ways the key moment of this whole Obama trip, the speech in Berlin notwithstanding. He was inevitably going to get the question. You're talking with a military commander in Iraq who has explicitly said, I don't think we should have a timetable for withdrawing. Are you going to listen to him or not? Mm-hmm. And the answer was, sure, I'll listen to him, but if I'm president, I'll make the decisions. I mean, it's the right answer, I guess, but it also it was the touchiest moment, and he got through that, I think, pretty well. The McCain frustration, on the other hand, is that all the attention is now focused on what seems to be a coming together around the idea that by 2010, American troops ought to be able to be out, at least the combat version of the American troops. And the Obama claim in that direction is getting all the attention. The McCain counter, which isn't getting nearly as much attention, is if not for the surge, we wouldn't be in a position to be able to say this. What about if all the troops had been out a year ago the way Barack Obama wanted them to be? We wouldn't be in this situation. But that doesn't seem to have been the message that carried the week.
Michael Krenich, the big media was all over Obama's tour, the big TV anchors all there, and everybody asking about his opposition to the surge now that even he concedes the surge has made some pretty good progress there. He had some complex contortions, it sounded to me, in his response to that, but I don't know. How did you hear his response on that front? Is he sort of stepping up to his opposition and the subsequent success of the surge?
From what I've heard, Obama has said that clearly if you put 30,000 troops in there, there'll be a reduction in violence. He has not been able to bring himself to say the surge worked. He doesn't want to say those words, and you wonder if that's going to go on the entire campaign.
But he was saying things are a lot better. You've got to, you know, mm-hmm. you can see it in the streets. I mean, he clearly makes that noise.
He was all but saying it, but he didn't want to say McCain was right, the surge has worked. So you could see, as you said, there was those contortions going on, and he was trying to give the credit to the soldiers who did things, but saying, well, maybe if we did it my way, the same thing would have happened, or there was the awakening, and that also played a role. So the McCain campaign, however, is trying to also look forward. They realize that as long as they continue talking about this, that voters at some point will say you're just talking about the past. So they're also trying to transition to talking about the future. It's one of the reasons that McCain is also talking about Afghanistan, which Obama's been doing for a while, and they both agree that there has to be more U.S. troops in Afghanistan as well. So,
Jack, I hear you there, yes.
Yeah, I was just going to add to that. You know, McCain went through some contortions of his own this week talking about the surge. CBS essentially cleaned him up. He made a comment to them that really misdated the connection between the sequence of events between the Anbar awakening and the surge. He seemed to say the surge came first. CBS edited that out and put in his generic slam at Obama wanting to lose a war. Now, this is an example, it strikes me, of high press favoritism, and the next day CBS apologized. Then, the next day, in front of a meat counter someplace, in Pennsylvania, I think, McCain got into a long disquisition, which just seemed to muddy everything up. He seemed to be saying that, well, the surge is part of a broader counterinsurgency campaign. It's just an element of it, and it goes back. It just struck me that he was all over the lot on this, and he reminded me of somebody of whom Churchill talked, an MP. He said this fellow did not know what he is going to say before he says it, does not know what he is saying while he says it, and forgets what he said after he has said it. That's the impression you get as McCain starts to dig his way out of these gaffes.
And yet, there he is, hanging in. Let's go to Columbia, South Carolina. Bill, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. I was wondering, I just never seem to get a feel for what Obama has to say, really. I see all these scripted news conferences, but I never hear any press conferences where he actually takes questions or hears, you know, I get an actual feel for what the guy thinks, not just what the speechwriters are writing for him or what, you know, the teleprompter says. I was wondering, is he ever going to get to that point? You know, the town hall meetings, he's kind of against that.
And give us a beat on McCain there, Bill. What do you think of him in the town hall meetings this week and beyond? It sounds like you may be with him.
Well, I'm not I'm for McCain, but I'm not a huge McCain supporter, but I appreciate at least he takes the time to speak and answer questions, and I know where he's coming from. I may not agree on all his points, but at least I know what he's going to say when he's not prompted.
Yeah, Bill, thanks for your call. Michael Cranish, in fairness, Barack Obama did have that press conference there in Jordan, that dramatic ancient setting. Questions answered, but there's also been a rumble from inside the Obama bubble, if you will, about how he's increasingly inaccessible, I don't know, almost presidential in his traveling and interaction style with the press. What do you say, Michael?
Well, he did invite the anchors over to the interviews, and I'm sure if you're a traveling mm-hmm. member of the press, you're not going to get the same access that we used to get during the primaries. You know, especially covering things like the New Hampshire primary, you can talk to these candidates almost any time you want. It becomes an awful lot harder during the general election. You know, this week, obviously, we're talking a lot about Obama's trip, and it seems like McCain is reactive. That can, however, change on a dime. There's a lot of talk here in Washington and on the McCain campaign trail about who we might select as a vice presidential nominee, and maybe they'll do that soon so that then we'll spend a week talking about McCain. So there's an awful lot of concern in the campaign about, do they pick the right person? Do they go with someone who's basically someone he's very friendly with, or do they pick someone like a Mitt Romney, who some people believe will help him on the economy and get people talking about that issue?
Well, look at those potential VP picks. Let's get a call from Blake in Cranston, Rhode Island. Hi, Blake. You're on the air.
How's it going, Tom?
Pretty well. What do you know?
I think more credit has to be paid to who Obama is touring with Senator Jack Reed over there.
Former Army Ranger, Senator from Rhode Island, yep.
Yep. He's, you know, head of the Senate Arms Committee, and he's in the Iraq Study Group. And I feel that it's strengthening Obama's cause, because what he gets attacked for is his lack of military experience. And I feel with touring with Jack Reed, potentially either running me, I don't know, but I feel like a lot more credit has to be paid with him by choosing someone who is a high-ranking, you know, has a high-ranking profile and knows what they're talking about over there. And with I feel that McCain's attacks are almost unfounded just because of this. You know, like it feels like Obama has experts on his side with what's going on over there. And I just feel more credit has to be paid to Jack Reed and Obama for picking to go with Jack Reed.
Blake, we've got it. Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island at his side, Senator Chuck Hagel at his side. And Jack Beatty, you've been looking at the same poll that Gerald Seib's newspaper put together, and more than that, still challenges in spite of that in terms of really nailing the confidence of a winning majority in the United States.
For Obama, yeah. I mean, Jerry has in a couple of weeks ago in a column, he pointed out the gap between the generic Democrat, a Democratic candidate for president, and Obama. What was it, about 10 or 12 points, Jerry?
It was a little smaller now, but that was what it was, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, so in other words, that guy, the generic guy, wins by what in modern terms is not a landslide, but a substantial amount, whereas Obama is tied, and of course he may not even be tied. If we remember the tendency of white voters to overstate their support of black candidates simply because they don't want to seem racist, it may well be that Obama's tie is no pie, or his lead is no lead at all, that McCain may really be ahead. And of course, this raises the whole issue of race and religion. And, you know, in that connection, Peter Hart has been doing some really outstanding focus groups and some sort of disquieting ones. In a recent one in Virginia, 7 out of 12 of the participants thought that Barack was Muslim. And a few weeks ago, C-SPAN televised a Hart group that he did in York, PA, and race and religion really haunted the session. You know, asked what event of the primary campaign they recall, 6 of 12 named Michelle's comment about being proud of America for the first time, and they didn't like it. One participant said Obama was a, quote, sleeper Muslim and feared that black helicopters carrying terrorists would be landing on the White House lawn if he were president. Another asked what kind of neighbor Obama would be. This man, a Hillary Clinton voter, said that if Obama were his neighbor, he'd move, and that Obama's election would touch off race riots. You know, according to the polls, 10 to 15% of Americans believe the Muslim lie, and that may account for some of this double-digit gap between support for Obama and for that that generic Democrat. You know, some people think once he starts to advertise after Labor Day, that gap will close. But with the first black candidate, you have to wonder whether, in fact, the gap might open in the other direction toward McCain.
Gerald Seib, how about it? As Obama was out in the world this week, this theme of questions around America's cultural comfort with Barack Obama came up, and it sounded like, kind of like a surrogate for race. What's going on
with
that?
I'm not sure it is. I mean, he's a very unconventional candidate. Mm-hmm. I mean, part of it is the racial factor, obviously. But, you know, born in Hawaii, spent a fair amount of his youth in Indonesia, educated at Harvard Law School, has a wife who has become somewhat controversial in her own right, has the church in Chicago that's become controversial. It's just not and he's been in the Senate, by the way, less than 4 years. That's not a normal profile for a presidential candidate. So I think the reality is you have a lot of voters who probably are available to Barack Obama, but they're not there yet because they're not yet comfortable with the background and values. And yes, sure, that's part of that is race, but it's not entirely race. It has to do with, is this a person that I can identify with, which is a question voters ask themselves every 4 years about every candidate who's a nominee. So I think the Obama campaign's view of this is an opportunity. It's not a problem. It's an opportunity to reintroduce Barack Obama to a lot of people, particularly in important battleground states, who, as interesting as this campaign has been, have not really focused in on it as much as they might have, and they don't really know the Barack Obama story. And, yeah, the danger in that is that the void can be filled by a lot of misinformation or disinformation. Mm-hmm. That's the challenge for the Obama campaign, and it can go either way.
Interesting.
It's not unlike, Tom, by the way, the 1980 mm-hmm. campaign when
Carter, you know, Reagan.
The people were unhappy with the status quo of Jimmy Carter, but they looked at Ronald Reagan about this point in 1980, and they said, are we really comfortable with this guy? Is he a cowboy? Is he too risky? Can we live with that kind of conservative philosophy? Mm-hmm. And it took until October, really, before people got comfortable with Ronald Reagan as commander-in-chief.
Interesting to look on down in the details of your poll with NBC News. McCain takes it for being knowledgeable and experienced, being commander-in-chief, being consistent, standing up for his beliefs, having strong leadership qualities. But then Barack Obama takes it by the same margins or more in some cases for who would improve America's standing in the world, who's compassionate enough to understand average people, who offers hope, who's likable. Michael Cranish, at this point, how do you read the McCain camp's beat on their own prospects? Are they what are they thinking?
Well, I did talk to them at length about that, and they say, of course, they want to spin it as favorably as possible, but they say, look, remember when Dukakis was 17 points ahead of Bush, and right now they see the race here is basically tied. They see the South, they still believe, will be in their favor unless there's an enormous surge of black registration, young registration that the Obama campaign is counting on. And they look at the polls that were referenced earlier, the fact that it's basically statistically tied in Minnesota, for example, close in Michigan, close in Colorado. They say that they feel very comfortable where things are, and they feel that at the end of this week, they don't think Obama will get the big bounce that Obama's hoping for. So they'll tell you that they are very confident, and they point to other situations of other races that were much farther apart at this point. And they say, look, we're basically even, and they look very well in this race. They think it's going well.
Jack, what are you looking for in the coming weeks here? I mean, we're headed up to convention time before you know it. Barack Obama comes back off this big bump. John McCain says he's still going to get out on that offshore oil rig. Just let the hurricane clear out and he'll be there.
Right. He's got to hope for better weather and some. I mean, you know, the coincidence of events was very bad for McCain this week. And yet, as we say, he's still hanging around and actually came up in some polls in these states. And, you know, I don't mean to imply, as I did earlier, that it's just resistance to Obama's race or that it's just this kind of vote that's going for McCain. I mean, the polls do show that people respect his story. He has a great mm-hmm. story. And that story, I think, translates to people. This is somebody who has shown that he will give up almost anything for his country, and therefore he's not going to be bribed. He's not going to be partial. He's going. You know, there's a kind of integrity that nothing in this campaign has yet touched on McCain.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. More headlines this week. Retired Microsoft boss Bill Gates teamed up with New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg for a worldwide anti-smoking campaign.
We've just got to make sure we don't have to wait for those countries to get as rich as we had to get before we woke up and looked at the evidence and changed completely how we thought about smoking.
Bosnian war criminal Radovan Karadzic, finally captured with a great big beard and bloody record, former U.S. Balkans negotiator Richard Holbrooke said, about time.
Karadzic was, of all the bad men in the Balkans, he was the one I personally thought was the worst. Because, I mean, I don't think there's anyone on earth other than bin Laden who was better to capture than this guy.
And President Bush gives a White House send-off to a batch of U.S. Olympians.
You're not going to be alone in Beijing, because you're going to be accompanied by the hopes and pride of millions of Americans.
We're joined this week by Gerald Seib, assistant managing editor for the Wall Street Journal, writes the Capital Journal column there. Michael Cranish, Washington correspondent for the Boston Globe. He's been out with John McCain, is with us. Jack Beatty's here as well. Let's go to Scarlett in Wayland, Massachusetts. Scarlett, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to comment about how, being a newly registered voter, I feel that McCain's running a kind of defensive campaign with his new Fidel Castro says Obama's the most advanced candidate. And I was just wondering if you think Obama will eventually run negative campaigns. I haven't seen any yet, but I was wondering what you think.
Will they roll out negative ads from the Obama side? Let me go to our panel. But first, here was one catchy one this week, a little Frankie Valli in one McCain camp web-only ad campaign, taking a shot at what they complain about is the media's big love for Obama. Video compilation of reporters and anchors praising Obama set to Frankie Valli's Can't Take My Eyes Off of You.
The media's love affair with Barack Obama is all-consuming.
The feeling most people get when they hear a Barack Obama speech, I felt this thrill going up my leg. I don't have that too often.
The biblical term for it, since we're in a biblical era, is deliverance. We're being picked up and moved to where we have to be.
What percentage of the mainstream media is in the tank for Barack Obama?
Oh, by 90%.
Almost hard to remain.
McCain ad bashing Obama for media love right there. That's the allegation. There was another one on Monday plastering Obama's photograph over high gas prices at the pump.
Gas prices, $4, $5, no end in sight. Because some in Washington are still saying no to drilling in America. No to independence from foreign oil. Who can you thank for rising prices at the pump?
Big prices at the pump and Obama in the background. Michael Cranish, is that fair?
The ad on oil prices, you know, that ad, you have to ask yourself the question, if there was offshore drilling, you know, approved today, would that make an impact at the pump? It would be many years if it did have an impact, and some people will say it would be rather small. The Obama campaign would probably make the argument that the Iraq war has led to a spike in oil prices, so they may turn that around and use that against McCain. On the first ad that you ran, you know, for a long time, people talked about McCain and the media as being in bed. And McCain, in fact, joked that the media was his base. So this has gone both ways. And clearly he's trying to make the point that, look, the anchors are over there and so forth. But I think especially, you know, the mainstream media have watched very closely the networks this week. And they've made a point of trying to give McCain a chance to respond, whether they show an Obama story. And both of these candidates, I mean, they're the major party candidates, they're going to get enormous attention through the rest of the campaign. So it's different when you talk about Chris Matthews on a talk show that is intended to be provocative and pejorative in some ways, and you know what the regular media is doing.
Gerald Seib, what about Scarlett's question and where the Obama campaign is likely to go? Do you see them as already having rolled out negative ads? Do you see them with a that kind of campaign up their sleeve, Gerald?
The Obama campaign.
Yes.
I don't think it cuts against the Obama image, and I think they'd be reluctant to go there, which doesn't mean they won't get there by any means. But if you think about the Obama persona and the purpose of the campaign, the identity of the campaign, it is to portray Barack Obama as a different kind of politician, in his own words, a post-partisan politician, somebody who is not trapped in the ideological and partisan debates of the baby boomer generation. You know, what did you do during the war in Vietnam? Did you inhale when you smoked pot or not? He says essentially, I'm beyond all that. Let's leave that behind and let's get beyond the sort of wedge politics of the 1990s. To go into a lot of negative campaigning cuts against that identity of the whole candidacy. So I don't think they're going to be really eager to go there, but, you know, having covered a lot of these campaigns, every campaign gets there eventually to some extent.
Yeah. You know, and Tom, the 527s are already there on the Obama side.
MoveOn.org.
Yeah, I'm thinking of that especially rending one of a woman with her baby saying, John McCain, you can't take my Johnny, to send him to fight in Iraq. You can't keep your hands off him. After it quotes McCain saying, we'll be in Iraq for 100 years.
Let's go to Ben in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hi, Ben. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I was wondering about a comparison or contrast between John McCain's foreign trip as a presidential candidate to South America and Mexico in light of Obama's current trip and all the concerns about whether or not it's appropriate to be abroad as a presidential candidate.
So your point is, fair is fair. If John McCain can go to Colombia, why can't Barack Obama go to Jordan?
Yeah,
or Berlin?
I thought if you guys could offer some reflections on if there are differences there or not. It seems to me that they were somewhat congruous in terms of
maybe
wanting to go abroad.
Maybe parallels and maybe not. Michael Cranish, how about it? Can you draw a parallel there? Do you think John McCain's right to suggest that Barack Obama shouldn't be out in front of that big crowd in Berlin when he's not the president yet?
I think it has to do with – certainly McCain has taken trips abroad, as the caller noted. So it wasn't so much that Obama was making the trip. What the McCain campaign was arguing very strongly was that, first of all, that he should have waited to make up his mind on Iraq policy before going to Iraq and talking with General Petraeus. And secondly, they didn't think that it was appropriate for him to make that speech for 200,000 people in Berlin. It wasn't that he went abroad. It was what he did when he went abroad and what he said before he went abroad.
And Gerald Saab, I wonder just about the tone of that speech in Berlin. I mean, it was certainly a big change of image to see an American, if not president, then, presidential candidate receiving that kind of warm reception after many years in which it's been all protests and anger there. You've got a couple different readings on it. David Brooks in the New York Times today saying, it's all kind of palaver and optimism without reality, he writes, isn't eloquence. It's just Disney. This is the end of history on acid, a kind of kumbaya criticism there. But then you've got Fareed Zakaria writing in Newsweek saying, Obama's got a kind of a pragmatic toughness underneath his rhetoric that may be just what the world needs now. What do you say, Gerald?
Well, I think it had to be a little bit kumbaya, because the one thing you can't do as a candidate is to go overseas, talk to foreigners, and criticize the foreign policy of the sitting president of the United States. That, in fact, was the great risk or trap for Barack Obama. So he had to avoid that. As a consequence, you almost have to talk about vision and generalities, which, in fact, is pretty much what the Berlin speech was. There were a couple of tougher comments directed at the Europeans there, I thought, the ones that said essentially, you got to suck it up and help us in the war on terror, mm-hmm. and we all have to get together and worry more about places like Africa and put some money behind our worries. So there were some messages, but they were pretty general. But I think they had to be, because the criticism of the trip would have been much harsher if he would have appeared to have been acting as president, speaking as president, or criticizing the leader of the country from which he comes as a candidate well before the election.
Let's go to Jack.
Well, I was just going to say, to Ben's point, John McCain did take a foreign trip into the Middle East, to Iraq and Israel just a few months ago, six or eight weeks ago, mm-hmm. and he made just an astounding gaffe twice. He muddled up the Sunni, who was Sunni, who was Shiite, who was Iran supporting, who was it not.
Joe Lieberman at his side
and
in Jordan.
And Joe Lieberman had to tug him by the mm-hmm. elbow and say, no, John, mm-hmm. you got that wrong. So he made a flagrant gaffe. If anything like that had happened with Obama, imagine how the Republican machine would say, inexperienced, doesn't know anything about foreign policy, doesn't know the elementary facts about Iraq.
Let's go to Des Moines, Iowa, Jack, and CJ. CJ, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm a little bit mystified by this whole 200,000-person turnout in Germany. I don't understand why they would come out in such numbers. They had to take off work and show up to see a junior senator. I'm a Democrat. I'm not for Obama. He hasn't convinced me of anything yet.
Maybe a junior senator, but maybe in line to see the White House. Of course, the news reports, CJ, say that a bunch of folks may have been in Berlin on vacation, on holiday, not necessarily taking off from work, but still, with the history of JFK and Ronald Reagan standing there, doesn't it make sense a little bit that they might want to see this very unusual American candidate?
Candidate, no. President, yes. And even one of your guests led off with making a comment of, to have a president of the United States received this way, he's not the president.
So, give it a minute. If, in fact, he'll ever be, CJ, we've got it. Let me get one more from Iowa. Marion, Pat, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
Great segue. My thought is the liberal press, you guys included, talked about Jack Kennedy, Ronald Reagan, great presidents. It'd be like comparing Ted Williams and Babe Ruth, and then you got Barack Obama, a minor leaguer. He has no business being compared or even talked in the same sentence as those two great presidents.
Well, how many other folks near the White House, if not in it, have stood in the middle of Berlin and had a crowd like that? I mean, I don't know what you call it, maybe unearned or maybe brilliant campaigning, but didn't his campaign kind of guarantee those comparisons by standing where JFK and Reagan stood, Pat?
But it's a media fluff. They interviewed some Germans. Why are you here? Oh, because he's new, he's different. There's no substance. The cover is coming off. That's why you're seeing back in the United States, people are starting to realize there's no substance. The onion, you're peeling it back, you're getting there, and it's wag the dog.
Yeah, Pat, we've got it. Gerald Seib at the Wall Street Journal, what do you say?
Well, I think that there's the campaign that Obama has run is really not about a lot of detailed policy debates. He will say that. His campaign will say that. Their view of this campaign is that this is an election about style of governance and leadership and change. And that's both their theory of the campaign and also the grounds on which it can be fairly criticized, I think. Again, I think the problem with going overseas as a candidate, particularly in this kind of a media bubble, is that you have to be careful not to be too substantive, because whatever you say will be read as a critique of the existing American policy, and that is a no-no for a candidate. You go overseas, you cross the water's edge, and you have to be an American first and a candidate second. That's why this was an unusual trip and why it was tricky for everybody.
Let's go to Clinton, South Carolina, and Robert. Robert, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to really, I guess, kind of ask a question to see if you fellas had an opinion on it. I think it's the racism. I live in South Carolina. I've lived here my whole life. And I think that racism is playing a much bigger factor. People that think that he's Muslim or say that, they don't think he's Muslim. They're just using that as an excuse, you know, so they don't have to say I'm racist and I don't want to vote for a black man. I just wondered what you guys thought about that.
Let us pick it up. Gerald, you've got the poll. What do you say?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's clearly a race factor. You'd be foolish to deny it. I think we asked people explicitly in our poll, is race the most important factor in your choice? And I think overall we got about 8 to 10% of the people who said yes. Interestingly, about 20% of African Americans said it's the most important factor, but that's understandable. I think they have a chance to vote for somebody like them in a way for the first time, and so they're not shy about saying that they like that opportunity. But the question, which I think Jack raised earlier, is do polls really find the true nature of that sentiment? And I have my doubts that they do. There's some people who won't vote for somebody of the opposite race. They're not likely to say that's the case to a pollster, or at least reluctant to do so. So it's not a factor that you can measure very easily. You know it's there, but nobody can quantify it, I think.
Michael Kranich, in Berlin, Barack Obama saying loud and clear, Reagan talked about tear down this wall. Of course, JFK was staring at the wall when he was there. Barack Obama says now it's time to tear down walls between races and tribes, between Muslim and Christian and Jew and right on. You know, maybe there's a part of the American electorate that's not so sure about tearing down walls. I mean, on the Mexican border, we just put up a big one.
Right. Well, I think Obama is trying to do the classic campaign thing of this time of the campaign to be very aspirational. this point of the campaign, you're supposed to have a lot of poetry. You're not supposed to come up with such detailed proposals that the opposing side can pick it apart completely. They've got enough to pick apart, obviously. But he wants to feed into the whole idea of the campaign is hope, you know, for example. So, and which sounds similar, by the way, to the Clinton campaign theme back in those days. So that's what he's trying to do. He wants to feed into that. There are certain people who will certainly say he's being over the top. And you have to remember also that these are very broad speeches. You remember that President Bush, when he first ran for office, said he wanted to have a very humble foreign policy, but then he has to react to events. So for voters, to use the phrase the caller just used, they, over the course of a campaign, they will peel back the onion. They'll listen to the aspirational speeches, and gradually during the convention, then during the debates, they'll get more to the specifics, and that's what the campaign's about.
One more big sound this week on the housing bill. Through the House now, still to go to the Senate, and President Bush likely to pass. Here's California Democrat Maxine Waters, chairwoman of the House Subcommittee on Housing. She's saying bailing out homeowners is necessary. The provision, she wrote, providing nearly $4 billion to buy foreclosed homes, went through in the House after this floor debate on Wednesday.
It is not getting better. It is getting worse. And we find that community after community is being destroyed because we have boarded up foreclosed homes that are driving down the property values, and they cannot sell them, and they're stuck.
Gerald said we've only got half a minute, and that's a huge piece of legislation, I guess, likely to go through, but is it likely to put a cork in this housing market problem?
Not in and of itself. I mean, perhaps 400,000 homeowners who are either in foreclosure or facing foreclosure will be able to benefit by having the government help them refinance their loans. That's a significant number, but it's a fraction of the people who are in danger of foreclosure over the next year or two. So I think ultimately it helps on that front. The most important thing it does in the end is put taxpayer support behind Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the two big quasi-governmental mortgage giants, and tells the markets we're not going to let them go down. In the long run, that may have more stabilizing effect than anything else.
Also, though, interesting in the long run, what that message says for big finance outfits when the American taxpayers put right behind them or on
Absolutely.
The hook for them.
Absolutely.
A long tail there. Gerald Seib, it's always great to have you. From the Wall Street Journal, the new book is Pennsylvania Avenue, Profiles in Backroom Power. Jerry, thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
And Michael Cranish, Washington correspondent with the Boston Globe. Michael, thanks for Tales from the McCain campaign this week. Thanks for being here, Mike.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Jack Beatty, have a great weekend, my friend.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Have a great weekend. This is On Point.